This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's the Stinkin' Truth Podcast, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook. Now, here's your host, Mark Schlereth.
Hey, welcome in to the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Schlereth, alongside my co-host, Mike Evans, Millennial Ben, producing the show. I want to thank our presenting sponsor, the great folks over at Bet Rivers. Check them out, betrivers.com. Download the app. They do a phenomenal job. They are great. That's Bet Rivers. I tell you what, love them. They're awesome. So anyhow, Mike, how are you, buddy?
Man, I'm great. Ever since the Super Bowl ended in February, we were already looking ahead to the next season. Months and months later, here we are.
I know. You know, there's not going to be another weekend without professional football until, what, February, right?
Yep.
I'm like, how glorious. Good is that?
Glorious.
It is glorious. And you're ready for kickoff. I mean, the opening week. I tell you what, man, hope springs eternal. Opening weekend is awesome, right? Because guess what? If a few things fall your way, even if you're a crappy team, there's parity in the NFL. You know, the guy has one of those outlier years where he's just incredible. Who knows what could happen to you?
Avoid injuries, all that kind of
right.
thing. Are we going to see a different, for all of us who just plop down on our couches with a cold one and nachos and wings, will the games maybe not look different, but will they be played differently this year?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I think you look at what transpired last year. Now, I thought the television product looked tremendous. Like, I didn't even notice there weren't fans in the stands. And I've said this many times, in all the imperfections, it was perfect. How many times was I in the booth calling a game on Fox where all of a sudden fourth quarter rolls around and we go to a TV timeout and I take off my headphones and I look around and go, there's not a single soul in this stadium. Like, it felt crazy to me. Absolutely insane. And so, I don't know, I just thought it was a really cool thing that they did such a good job because, you know, when you're in the booth, you have your headphones on and the actual crowd noise, they were pumping it in from previous games from games of the previous season. So it sounded like there were people in the stands. So, like, to me, there was not really any difference. And the sound guys did a great job of mixing and all that stuff. But there were significant differences in the way the game was played. So you go on the road in the NFL, and this is one of the ways you find out if you're a good team or not. You go on the road in the NFL and you win on the road, I don't care who you're playing. You could be playing the Blind Sisters of the Poor. It's hard. Man, it's hard to win on the road. And think about it. From an offensive perspective, right? Not the defensive perspective, because the defensive perspective, you're on the road, it's quiet. The home team is being quiet for its offense, so you can communicate, you can yell at one another, you can talk to one another, like you can get all your calls across. Like there should be no reason you should have assignment errors from a lack of communication standpoint on the defensive side of the ball on the road. It's much easier on the road. Your whole playbook is open to you. When you're on offense, Mike, depending on field position and everywhere you go, man, you start scrap piling stuff. You just start scrapping. Like, hey, we're coming out at the own 20. Okay, that's 25% of our playbook we have to eliminate. Hey, man, you're going on the road in Kansas City where the crowd noise is going on and it's nasty. Hey, there's 35, 40% of your playbook that you scrap. hey, we can't throw seven steps. You go against on the road against elite pass rushing teams. Man, we scrap pile every seven-step drop. You know, the five-step drops, we eliminate the ones with two hitches. You can have five-step, throw it right on your fifth step, or one hitch, you know, moving up in the pocket once. That's it. Like, other than that, you got to scrap pile the two-hitch, five-step throws. You can throw three-steppers and five-steppers that are out quickly. And as an offensive line, you better know. I got to know which ones I've got, which ones I don't have, right? And then it's hard to get off on the ball. The one thing I always say about offense is the rhythm of snap count is incredibly important. I think the average fan doesn't realize how much we use snap count to our advantage and how much all of us are offsides, but we're all offsides together, so it never gets called. I'm always offsides. If the ball is snapped on two, I'm off on 1 1/4, and everybody is. You better be, because it's our advantage, and we use it that way. So now all of a sudden, you get the crowd noise going again, and you can't hear the quarterback. And now you're trying to time the rhythm of that play. And you get a backup quarterback, or your quarterback doesn't have a great sense of rhythm. Guess what? How many pre-snap penalties will there be because of crowd noise and because of lack of rhythm on the offensive side of the ball? It is one of the most important things to an offense that never gets talked about. The rhythm of our offense. And then from the holding call standpoint, man, I was in the meetings last year when they were like, hey, man, we're eliminating. If holding on the backside, we don't think it really affects the play, don't call it. I was in that meeting. Like, hey, we're gonna eliminate some of these calls because offensively we haven't had a chance to practice OTAs because of the pandemic and everything else. So we're going to eliminate a lot of these calls. Are those calls coming back? Are you going to call it more tightly? Is the competition committee said, hey, man, this is unfair to the defensive players? So, like, all these things come up and you start to think about how the game might look different. It may be significantly different, Mike, just from that standpoint alone. So all of a sudden, I mean, you had an all-time low in holding calls. You had an all-time high in offensive production. You had the highest completion percentage in the history of the NFL, the most touchdowns ever thrown in the history of the NFL. It's coming back down.
Has to be. Some kind of market correction,
I don't know to what
right?
degree, right? But it's coming back down.
Yeah, has to be. All right, well, let's get into the league, the conferences, because to me, I see wide-open conferences. I don't see any surefire teams that will end up making it. And yes, I mean Kansas City, too, by the way. And I know Kansas City's been to the last two Super Bowls. They've won one. But
you certainly don't think Kansas City's going to slump off
good. No, I believe they'll win their division. Okay. They'll be one of the top teams. But as far as just inking them back into the Super Bowl, I'm not going to do it because, you know, you look at the history of the NFL, history of the Super Bowls, 55 of them. Only twice can you find examples of teams that lost in the Super Bowl one year and come back and won that Super Bowl the next year. Miami, very early on, their undefeated season. And New England a few years ago where they lost to Nick Foles in Philly and then came back the next year and beat the Rams. That's it.
Right.
You know, you would think it's the team that won the Super Bowl that would have the difficulty coming back
the next
year.
They would get fat and happy, right?
It's the team that lost. It's not the fat and complacent factor for the winner. It's the hangover effect for the loser.
Yeah, how many teams – I wonder how many teams – I'm not asking you to look this up. How many teams – have lost the Super Bowl and gotten back to the Super Bowl only to lose again. I would imagine there's a lot of teams that have just gotten back to the Super Bowl. I mean, getting back to the Super Bowl's hard. I mean, we know right now there's four in just the Buffalo Bills alone, right? So we know it's happened more than the two times somebody's come back and won it. It's happened at least four times. You know, if you think about just getting back to the Super Bowl, so there's four, there's six out of the 55 right there with the two teams you just mentioned, and I'm sure there's a handful of other teams that have lost the Super Bowl and gotten back, at least gotten back to the Super Bowl. So, anyhow, it happens. I understand that. It's hard to do. I mean, just getting to the Super Bowl is hard to do. But Kansas City, like, I think the thing that Kansas City did probably better than anybody else is in the offseason, really understood what their weakness was and really revamped it. And I don't know. I mean, preseason football is kind of hard to watch. You know, there's not a lot to it. But I do pay attention to teams I'm going to call, right? So I paid attention to the Giants. I watched, you know, all their preseason games. paid a little attention to Philly and some of the in San Francisco, some of the other teams I'm going to call. And I just happened to catch some Kansas City because they're in Denver's division, and you and I live in Denver. We do a show in Denver. We love, you know, Denver, Colorado, and we're Broncos guys. So a bottom line is I watched them completely get destroyed in the Super Bowl because they lost their starting right tackle. They lost their starting left tackle. They didn't have adequate replacements, and there was a ton of what I call football hubris from Andy Reid. Like, there are no icebergs in this water, full steam ahead. We're not going to run the ball, even though we averaged 7 yards a carry running the ball. We're just not going to do it. And it cost you, you got your ass whipped. That's what it comes down to. And you scored 9 points. You got beat 30-9. They attacked their offensive line issues. And I tell you what, I watched them play in the preseason. They got a rookie center. They got a rookie guard. They've got a right tackle that they were really high on that I think opted out for COVID last year in Nang. And they went out and got Brown from the Ravens. Like, you want, and Tooney, they signed as a free agent. They are loaded. And I watched them come off the ball. I watched them establish themselves. They're going to be fine. I think Kansas City is right there at the top of the heap once again with what they did to revamp their roster on the offensive line. And then, obviously, you got a unicorn playing quarterback.
You buy all the Buffalo hype?
I do. Buffalo's a great team. Buffalo's got all kinds of talent. Like, Mike, the one thing that I have, and I called a Buffalo game last year where they completely dismantled the Broncos in Denver. I mean, they 41-19 or something like that. I mean,
they could have put up 70 that
yeah,
day.
It was. But their talent, like, when you think of Buffalo, you think of the weather, you think of a team that's got to run the ball, you think of, like, they have gone from running the ball with their quarterback, grooming him, slowly coming along to being a four-wide spread offense. And he's legit. Josh Allen's legit. There's a reason they paid him. He's that good. I think defensively they're outstanding. The one caveat I'll have with that is I don't think that they have, and I haven't watched any of them this preseason, but they just last year, their Achilles heel on defense is they didn't have one legitimate edge passer. They've got a bunch of really good defensive linemen. They've got good linebackers. I mean, they can play. They didn't have one edge presence guy where you have to say when you break the huddle, where's that dude? You know, where's number 91 or number 55 or whatever his number is, and how are we going to block him? They don't have that guy. So at any time in critical situations, you don't feel too bad about going 5-0 across the board and saying, hey, our five got your five, let's roll. You feel like you're going to hold up. And that would be the one caveat I would have about their defense. But I think they're incredibly talented. I think they're exceptionally well coached by Sean McDermott. And I just think they have this great work ethic attitude that I love watching.
All right, so let's say you put Kansas City and Buffalo at that top tier of the AFC. Then to me, it's an intriguing second tier made up of teams that it wouldn't surprise me if we saw them in the AFC championship game. And I'll put Cleveland, I'll put the Patriots, the Chargers, and the Ravens and Steelers.
Yeah.
All in that group.
Yeah.
And then whoever wins the South, Tennessee or Indy, let's say. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's about a half a dozen teams I put really kind of all in a pool together in that second tier. I'll listen to arguments for Miami or, you know, Denver, you know, teams like that. But those are kind of the six teams. Any of those teams that you could point to and say instantly, that's a sleeper to not only get to an AFC championship game, maybe even win an AFC
right.
championship game.
I think that Tennessee, not that anybody wants to see them in the Super Bowl, but I think that Tennessee is that team. I think Vrabel has done a great job transitioning from player to assistant coach to D coordinator to head coach. I think he's done a phenomenal job in that. I think Tannehill, the way they use Tannehill is intriguing to me because they still use enough RPO and his athleticism on the edge to threaten a defense. And I think what he does, it's very subtle, but it really opens up their running game for King Henry. And let me just say that that offensive line is as physical a group as there is in football. Roger Saffold's a guy I love watching. The right guard has come in from a small school. I can't remember his name offhand. I think it's Davis, but that dude absolutely thunder punches dudes in the face. I mean, it's unbelievable. So I think they're really good that way. I think the addition of Julio Jones, and if we're using, you know, we started the show saying, hey, injuries, all things being equal, if Julio Jones can be 90% of what he normally is, coupled with the other guys they have on that roster, A.J. Brown, and I'm telling you, Julio Jones sets a standard. Like, I've done a lot of Atlanta games, so I've been to a bunch of Friday practices. Julio Jones runs like every route he runs, his life depends upon it. I mean, it's a Friday practice, and he's a tone setter, and there's no diva in him. Like, he sets a tone that everybody else has to kind of jump on board with. So, like, if he is 90% of what he normally is, it just enhances their run game. And listen, I'm not even talking about their defense. They're going to possess the ball, just churn first downs, have enough power that their defense should theoretically be fresh. I think they're a bit of a sleeper.
Okay. Now, switching over to the NFC. The NFC, I think, is maybe even more fascinating than the AFC. Because at least with the AFC, I see that top tier of two teams.
Right.
Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, I see the NFC as just one giant mosh pit of six or seven teams. Throw a dart at them as to who could end up being the best. I mean, I'm talking about Tampa, Green Bay, San Francisco, the Rams, Seattle. Who stands out?
Yeah, I mean, you're 100% right. It's like there are so many good teams when you look at the way they're structured. And I think that in the NFC, you know, Tampa returns 23 starters if you include, you know, Antonio Brown. I mean, I've never seen anything like it in a league that churns over its roster by 30-35% a year. Like, I've got Giants, Denver, weekend one. And I'm watching last year film. Like, because I watched all the preseason stuff, right? So now I'm going back to last year's film to look at kind of formations and you know, what are their go-to runs? Like, what do they kind of hang their hat on? You know, what formations they run, route combinations, what do they look like, basically? With defensively, how do they show you, you know, from a coverage standpoint, what are they running most of the time? Are they running something on third down? Are they running something, you know, between the 20s? Do they get into something else in the red zone? What are they doing, type of thing, right? And so that's kind of how I break it down. And I look at, like, guys, and I'm like, oh, that guy's a really good player. Mark him down. I write him down. And then I realize, oh, yeah, he's no longer on the roster, right? So there's that turnover that happens. They didn't purge their roster. I mean, they bring everybody back. And remember, they were 8-5. And Tom Brady told me, he goes, listen, man, I'm still trying to figure out this offense. And then they go on this run. And, you know, Bruce Arians and Tom Brady come from different schools where Bruce Arians wants to read everything based on the middle linebacker and the post safety after the snap. Tom wants motions and formations to see, hey, what are they? Are they in man? Are they in zone? What's my read? What kind of leverage are they playing? He wants all that stuff pre-snap to get as much information as he can pre-snap so he knows the answers to the test post-snap. And so this different philosophy of melding these two philosophies together and finding, you know, common ground where they can both be happy, where Arians can get some of what he wants and Tom Brady can get a lot of what he wants. And, like, I can't help but think they're just going to be better. They're going to start where they left off, and they're just going to continue to get better. And then you talk about Green Bay and offensively what they are and how well Aaron Rodgers played in his MVP season. Stafford, as you know.
Real quick, let me jump in there. Yeah. Do you see any negative fallout from the Rodgers offseason drama?
No. Rodgers loves to play football, and he loves being with his – he's one of the dudes. He loves being with the guys. And he actually likes their coaching staff. He just doesn't like the GM. He thinks the GM's a turd bucket. So, you know, I mean, that's it. But you don't, like, during the course of a season, you know how many times you see the GM? You don't go upstairs, you know, where he's, you know, making phone calls and acting like a bigwig. You don't see that, right? So, he didn't come down and hang out in the locker room with you. So, you don't really have a relationship with that guy. So, it doesn't matter. But the bottom line, to me, is I think Rodgers will have no effect on that. Defensively, I get a little nervous with Green Bay. You know, new defensive coordinator, what are they going to be? How are they going to play? I think they've got some really good players. I think they've got a couple of really good DBs. They played a lot of nickel and dime last year. They matched up dime to base personnel all the time. That was their former defensive coordinator. And you can do a lot of that when you have Aaron Rodgers playing quarterback because you know points are going to come aplenty, right? So you can be a little bit more of a gambling, you know, hey, we don't have to defend the run. Let's just try to make sure we don't give up the big plays in the passing game. You know how I feel about Matt Stafford. I mean, I think he's an elite-level quarterback that has never been on a elite, never been part of an elite-level franchise.
I think he, for me, is one of the more fascinating, maybe one of the top five fascinating individuals in this league this season, because you're taking the belief, certainly, of Sean McVay and what they gave up to get him, and people like yourself who believe he is elite, and then you got guys like me like, well, yeah, but he was in Detroit for 11 years, and he never was really able to lift these guys, you know? I mean, his record is a below 500. So what is he? Is he truly an elite guy who is just held back by the absolute cesspool that's Detroit?
Yeah.
Or is this guy overrated?
Yeah, well,
we're gonna find out.
Let me throw it into our realm or anybody's realm that's listening. You can be an elite level worker and you can be great at your job. If you work for a crappy organization, are you gonna shine? Are you really gonna reach? Are you really maximize your potential? And, like, not everybody can come in and change, you know, things. I will tell you this. Like, all's I need to know, a guy that I have a ton of respect for, Bruce Arians is a guy I have a ton of respect for. I mean, he's been great as a coordinator. He's been great as a position coach. He was a quarterback at Virginia Tech, I think. You know, was it Virginia Tech that he was a quarterback? That he was a coach at Temple. This guy has been in the league for 100 years. Bruce Arians is not impressed by much, and Bruce Arians will rip anybody's ass. He doesn't care who you are. There are no golden gooses. And you saw him rip Brady's ass last year, multiple times. Bruce Arians told me point blank, there's one dude that I come out early. He goes, that I drag my fat ass out early to watch. Warm up, and that's Matthew Stafford. The way he throws the ball,
high praise,
and he's like he is tough as blank. He's like he's one of the toughest dudes because I have so much respect for him as a player. And you know there are a lot of guys who were or are great players that play in organizations where they never get the accolades or they never get the credit they actually deserve. And that has happened, you know, that's happened to a ton of guys who are Hall of Fame players that don't have the Hall of Fame kind of credentials or accolades or wins or whatever. I mean, Joe Thomas, I know we talk about Joe Thomas, and Joe Thomas, phenomenal football player, great football, but played in Cleveland. I think he went to the playoffs one time in 12 years. I mean, he never missed a snap, for crying out loud. Like, so there are those guys that don't get the credit. I think you'll see Matthew Stafford. All of a sudden, people will be like on my way of thinking, oh my God, I didn't realize that guy was elite. He's elite.
All right. Before we get to our picks for week one, crystal ball it. NFC championship, AFC championship. Who goes to the Super Bowl? I'll give you mine first.
Okay.
AFC, I'm going to go with Kansas City and Cleveland.
Okay.
In the AFC Championship game with Cleveland and that outstanding roster that they've built.
Okay.
Going to the Super Bowl. And in the NFC, I'm going to buy into the Rams and Matthew Stafford hype. I'm going to go Rams, and who? I'll go Rams and Green Bay with the Rams. Cleveland, Rams, Super Bowl.
Wow.
With the Rams winning it all.
Okay. I'll go Rams. Who'd you go Rams and who?
Rams and Green Bay.
Green Bay. I'll go Rams and Tampa.
Okay.
I really want to go Tampa back. I don't want to go Tampa back.
Sure you
Super
do.
Bowl.
It's Tommy.
Oh, yeah. I love Tom Brady.
You love Tommy.
Rams and Tampa. I'll take Tampa. And then I'm going to go in the AFC. I like your Cleveland thing. But I'm going to go... I'm gonna go Bills Ravens.
Bills Ravens, okay.
Bills Ravens.
You love yourself some John Harbaugh, don't you?
With the Bills.
Okay. And so Bills and
Rams. Tampa.
Oh, Tampa. You got Tampa going. Okay, Bills,
yeah,
and Tampa.
Bills and Tampa.
And
I'll take Tommy.
Tommy goes, oh my God.
I'm trying to get,
if Tommy wins another one, geez.
I'm going to go, can you imagine if I get a Tampa game this year? I had four last year.
Yeah.
If I get a Tampa game and I'm face to face with Tom Brady in a production meeting,
mm-hmm.
that's too much handsome in one room. I guarantee
you.
You'd
be like, Tommy, I picked you guys to win in our podcast at the beginning of the season. All right. Picks. I get to go first since you were good you were better during the regular season, but I was better during the playoffs. And playoff time
I
is
won the
time.
Overall, yes. And you know what? My graciousness allows me to let you pick first. So go ahead.
All right. I'll give you credit. You have sold me on the Rams. I'm going to take the Rams -7.5 over the Red Rifle and the Bears, Andy Dalton. I'll take the 7.5 mm-hmm. there. I'll give that. I'm going to take another team. You're going to be on the San Francisco beat. And that seems like a team that's ready for a big bounce back. I'll take San Francisco Ooh. -7.5
I like
against
that
Detroit.
One. I wanted to take that one, but I can't. The rules of the game.
You can't double up.
You pick first, yep. So I can't double up.
And then I'm going to take Green Bay -3 over the Saints in Jacksonville. First of all, I just think Green Bay is a better team. They got the better quarterback, and boy, that's asking a lot of a Saints team that's had to pack up and move, and they're worried about what's going on back in New Orleans. So give me Green Bay -3.
Okay, well, I like that. You're writing these down, so you got to keep.
I'll be the record keeper.
Okay, yeah. You be the record keeper. All right, I'm going to go my first game. I've got the Eagles at the Falcons. I think the Eagles are somewhat of a hot mess. I don't think they figured out their systems yet. And I don't think it's going to come down to rock, paper, scissors.
No.
So I'm going to go the Falcons. I think the Falcons are a talented team. They haven't had it together the last couple of years. Falcons -3. I'll go in that direction. Then, you know, I'm not a believer in the Bengals yet. I still think the Bengals have a lot to go, you know, a lot of work to do. I'm going to go Vikings, the way they run the ball. I know Zimmer will have that defense fixed to a certain degree. I'm going to go Vikings giving 3 in Cincinnati to the Bengals. I like the Vikings there. And then lastly, Seahawks traveling to the Colts. The Seahawks -3 right now. I'm going to go Colts. I'm going to take the 3 and go with the Colts at home on that. So I think I've got the Colts, I've got the Vikings, and I have the Falcons.
All right, and I've got Green Bay, San Francisco, and the Rams. All right.
Yeah, that's predictions sure to go wrong.
Exactly. Follow us at your own peril.
Yes, exactly. Hey, listen, for everybody involved in the Stinkin' Truth podcast, thanks so much for listening. We truly appreciate you. For Mike, myself, for Millennial Ben, thank you. And we're going to start doing 2 a week starting next week. So make sure you tune in, subscribe, and let all your friends know. Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you next week.